Elektroauto News. Der Podcast rund um das Thema Elektromobilität. Mit aktuellen Entwicklungen, Diskussionen, Interviews und vielem mehr.
Servus und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge des Elektroauto News.net Podcast. Mein Name ist Sebastian und heute habe ich Jan-Flor Andersen zu Gast, Gründer und Geschäftsführer von Thiel Nordic. Aufgenommen haben wir die Folge in einem wirklich besonderen Setting, nämlich im Classic Car House in Kopenhagen, umgeben von echten Automobilen-Klassikern. Wir sprechen dort darüber, wie man ein Lade-Backend baut, das hunderttausende Ladepunkte verwaltet, warum Uptime alleine noch keine zufriedenen E-Autofahrerinnen macht und welche Rolle Automatisierung spielt, wenn die Margen im Stromverkauf so dünn sind, wie sie eben sind. Aber nun genug der Vorrede, wir steigen direkt ein ins Gespräch mit Jörn. Vorab sei aber noch gesagt, das haben wir natürlich auf Englisch geführt. Jörn war da ein bisschen besser und fluent, also flüssiger unterwegs, als es bei mir der Fall war. Ich denke aber, dass du auch einiges mitnehmen konntest und wir werden das Interview auch nochmal in den einen oder anderen Artikel weiterverarbeiten. Und wer das Feeling aus erster oder aus nächster Nähe mitbekommen möchte, der schaltet am besten auf YouTube ein. Den Link packen wir auch in die Shownotes, denn dort kannst du mit uns durchs Classic Car House in Kopenhagen laufen. Jetzt geht's aber direkt rein in den Podcast. Viel Spaß damit.
Hi Jörn, it's Hi, nice Sebastian. To be here. We're in the Classic Car House here in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Where history meets future, I think so, here with Thiel Nordic.
Yeah.
And we have this nice scenery here with old car, with classic cars. And you stand here for the future of mobility, e-mobility, I think so.
Yes.
But first of all, could you tell us who is Jörn Flor Andersen? What you're doing?
Yeah. And first, thank you for coming to Copenhagen and this wonderful setting. So, as you said, my name is Jörn Flor Andersen. I'm the CEO of our company Thiel.
Yeah.
We are making CPS or CPMS or CSMS system. So you can say management system for charging stations. My background is that's a technical background.
Yeah.
I have what's called a master in computer science and have been actually developing systems since the early 90s.
Wow.
So I guess you came here by plane.
Yeah, we came
That was true. One of the systems that I've been part of developing, the Amadeus system, reservation booking system. So you can say, so my background has been doing very large systems in all of, you can say, different kinds of areas. That could be banking, that could be, today we call it IoT. So tracking stuff, millions of devices anywhere, stuff like that. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so actually been building a lot of different companies' products for many, many years. That's the background.
And how was your way then from the systems like in the planes to e-mobility then, to chargers?
So you can say, why are we here today?
Yeah, why are we here today?
Talking about EVs and stuff. That's actually a fun story because you can say the background of building systems which are, have the possibility of scaling, having the possibility of handling a huge amount of messages, users, stuff like that, and with a lot of security being designed in. Then the step into mobility actually came like 8 years ago.
Okay.
I was contacted that if me and my team wanted to build a CPMS system. And they, the customer, they already had some. They knew that it was like approaching its limits.
Okay.
So they said very shortly, build us a system where we can have hundreds of thousands of chargers being attached. And potentially a million chargers. Go do that. So that was the short one.
Typical daily question to do.
Exactly.
But it was relatively new for you then. You know the software side for sure from other system which you scaled up. This with working in e-mobility with chargers and this high amount of 1 million charging points is a huge step for you also.
That was definitely a huge step. That was a completely new area for both me and my team. And you can say, I didn't even have an EV at that point myself. So now we are among very beautiful cars. And,
for sure.
And that's what I really like and also drive old cars, but not on electricity. So we had to, of course, very quickly do a lot of researching into, of course, there are standard protocols, et cetera, but there are tons of things that you need to know when you go into a completely new area. you can say for both for me and for the team as such, of course it was easy to, you can say we had like a platform because we were used to building systems with many, many devices, with tons of messages being processed each second, with security being built in, stuff like that. So you can say, of course, we had the technical foundation, but we still had to take that and move that into a new area.
Yeah.
So that was a fun start. So
I think so. So let's walk around a little bit here, so we will see more of the scenery here of the cars. Also, you said you were coming more from the classic car side. Did you drive also all the cars then, and then go to electrified cars?
Yeah.
Starting the research for a whole new segment in your company. It's not also learning about standards and regulation and so on. It's also to learn more about your car. So
exactly.
Was one of your first steps to drive an electric car and get a feeling for it, or how do you start it yourself?
You can say when you start projects like that, first thing is, of course, that when the assignment is to do something for a million chargers, then that's a whole other ball game. So you need to do a lot of stuff, especially for the chargers, for example. That's one good example to start there, and we did that. Because one thing is that you can communicate them through standards.
Yeah.
Another thing is how the different chargers, they actually, you can say, interpret or behave for the standard. So we dived deeply in all of the different kinds of chargers to see how should they be configured, how are they behaving. Just a simple thing as, if you communicate them and if you have a timeout, why is that different from another type or the situation that the charger is in? So all of that stuff actually started at that point. And you can say this was also a bit of a challenging project because we already had a base, already, let's say, like 10, 15,000 chargers being attached to the old one, which we should have on the new one. So it was not just like saying, okay, now we built this only for one charger type. Yeah. Everything is new. So it was like building a new platform and sliding that in. So that was another part of, you can say, the challenges.
Okay, so you had already a base where you started from.
Yeah, but it's a very good point that you're raising, because I guess that if you really would like to do that, you can't just do something like, for example, only investigating the chargers. Yeah. You also need to know, what's the communication between the car and the charger? You need to know also what's the behavior of the EV drivers.
I mean,
eight years ago, it was pretty new to most people, still is, at least in some countries. We are maybe a bit far here in Denmark, but still. And people there are used to one workflow with their normal car. When I say normal car, I mean
a
fuel-based car. So and they wanted to more or less, of course, it to behave the same. So you actually had to take in all kinds of situations, from the behavior of the EV driver to the behavior of the car to the charger to, of course, the connectivity, which might be faulty, etc., until the system that we actually built.
The faulty systems. We will come back later then. Yeah, I think so. Yes. This is one point where you provide solutions then for the EV drivers.
Yeah.
But just like you said, it's not only changing the standard how to fuel a car or how to charge a car. It's more about the mind of the EV driver than itself, what and how to handle it then.
Yes.
For sure. But for you, you came in with 15,000 charging points, I understand the right way, which would took a space and then go on from there. But just go a step behind. And we met here before on the classic car house in Copenhagen. And you told us you take a huge step from 500,000 EV cars to 600,000 in a short amount of time.
So that's it. It has really been, the adoption is amazing here in Denmark. And that has several reasons, I would guess. The main reason is, of course, that we have had a tax system for many, many years where we pay, like, you can say, triple the amount of a car that you do in Germany. You are very lucky.
So. Yeah, that's for sure.
and you can say these regulations has made it very affordable to buy a car. So they are either very low or non-existing, the extra tax that you need to pay on an EV.
Yeah.
So today, and all with all the nice EVs coming out right now, I mean, today you can buy a at least similar car from all the big car brands.
Yeah.
Now we are going among Mercedes, etc. They produce amazing cars. So you get at least the same car, but for more or less, like you can say, half the price or less here in Denmark. So that's a good reason for the quick adoption.
Yeah, just like here, we're standing here in front of a Bugatti, which is one of the most powerful fossil cars which we see on the street in very small amount, and now you could drive an, I say, medium to higher EV car, which also brings a huge amount of power and performance on the streets then.
Yeah.
So which changing the game on their own.
It is, and you can see the driving behavior.
Yeah.
Before, people, they were very slow at starting for the red light and when it turned green. Now, it's a rocket in front of you.
Just go away. I always think about this. If I think on my first EV driving experience, it was a Smart of the first generation in electric.
Yeah.
And I was standing red light. On the left side, it was a Porsche 911.
Yeah.
And I was going fast. And for the first 50 meters, I was in front of them. Then afterwards, okay, he got me.
Yeah.
But it was a very nice feeling to get this performance booster there and just starting out and go in front of him.
Yeah,
I think it's changed,
and yeah, it really has, and you can say so. You both get a very nice day to day feeling in an EV, and at the same time you get these amazing performance, even in the standard ones. Of course, you can give a bit extra, and then you really get performance ones. Maybe not as close as that, but pretty close.
Yeah, but so, you must keep the price point in mind if you look at this and then an EV which is going narrow there.
Yeah.
So
just doing a service on this one, that would be more expensive than buying the other car.
It could be a new EV car then there.
It could.
For sure. Yeah. Now, going from performant cars here to the artsy world of cars, I think so. BMW, your art experience which we show here or see here, we'll look at it, but also go a little bit deeper into your topic, I think. Mm-hmm. So we had it before about the role of software, of the implementation, of the scaling for EV chargers.
Yes.
Teal is doing this on their own for other companies, so you're more the white label solution for chargers.
You could say that, yes. Purely backend. I think today, if you look at the market for our kind of systems, there's one bucket where the CPMS systems, they want to do everything.
Yeah.
And then there's the one that we are part of, where we would like to do what we do the best, and then have a very open interface. So a lot of APIs.
Okay.
So an open platform.
Which could be used from your customer then, and he could say, okay, we'll pick that.
Yeah.
Or we take the whole package from Teal and...
Yeah, because you can say, if you look at the CPOs today, a lot of things is happening in this market with the CPOs. They are merging, they are getting more and more. So the big ones are becoming even bigger.
Yeah.
Some of the small ones are either stopping or they're being merged into these companies.
Yeah.
So that means that if you would like to really deliver something good, which fits in what they're already doing, you have to accept that they already have an ERP system, they already have a CRM system, they have everything in place around it. So that's the reason why that we say we do what we do best, and then we can easily integrate into the rest of them.
Okay. And what you're doing best?
Yeah, what are we doing best? So our focus is on the CPOs. So we would like to do, and that's I think we are doing, do something where we not only matter about the scalability and the stability of it. Yeah, it's nice, this isn't it?
The old word here.
It is, So where's the electric plug?
We don't see it here, but we'll come eventually.
There's actually a lot of conversations going on. It's been that actually for a year or two. If you talk about this scalability and the stability of your system, there's a lot of talk about uptime. Do we have 99.9, et cetera?
Yeah.
And the system that we built for our first customer, we had 5 nines of uptime. So okay. that was like a few minutes downtime in 6 years.
Okay.
But you can say that doesn't matter if everything doesn't work. So, I mean, we can be green and we can be up and we can have tons of nines.
Yeah.
But if the charger still doesn't work, I mean, the EV driver doesn't care. So I think that the most important thing in this question is that the backend systems like ours, they should actually take the responsibility of the whole chain. They need to do something and not just say, we are up and running. But yeah, somebody else's fault that, for example, the charger is misconfigured and something is not working. So that's what we are doing really good. And you can say that's some of our background from all of the kind of enterprise systems that we have been building for many, many years, that if we want to do this in a big scale, it's not just a matter of building stable software.
Yeah.
It's a matter of going in and taking responsibility for whatever is
for the whole system.
For the whole system.
Okay.
So if I should give one example, you could say that I have seen that somebody in the community, they have made some really interesting data around what actually makes things fail.
Yeah.
One of them is actually misconfigured chargers.
Okay, do we understand about misconfigured chargers?
Yeah, the different charger types, they have different configuration settings.
Okay.
That could be anything from giving back a ping that they are live, stuff like that. So there's a lot of things that need to be rightly configured for the correct or for the specific type of charger. And that includes also for the specific firmware versions of the chargers.
Okay, Jørn, if you're talking about chargers, we're talking AC and DC.
AC and DC, okay. that's both. It's the same picture for both AC and DC, yes.
Just to understand it right for our viewers and listeners, then that we know, okay,
good
it's
point.
Yeah, compatible
so
for both of them.
Their home charger, which they will have in their garage, and
but
as
also
well,
public then there.
And the public ones as well, yes, for sure. So that's it's not only, you can say, crucial to when you first install these chargers to get the configuration settings right.
Yeah.
It's as well that they don't drift. You could say it might be that if you get a new firmware version, some of them should be changed.
Yeah.
It could also be that you have there's a faulty charger. A technician, he is changing something.
Yeah.
He forgets to put back the right settings, etc. So it's both a matter of doing it the first time. And as well, of course, to keep them at all times in the right setting.
Okay.
So that's one of the things that our system does. So it actually just probes all the chargers regularly, see if it has the correct settings, reads that from, you can say, a repository of this is how the template should be.
Okay.
If something is wrong, we push that down so it's correctly configured again. And then we do, you can say, like a warning. So we do, like, you can say, It wasn't compliant to this charger.
Yeah.
So that also means that you have a lot of regulation, et cetera, which is okay, also documented, saying, now we are back to a compliant state with this charger as well. And that of course, that gives some real uptime.
Okay, and you will give this feedback also to the hardware side of the chargers, to the company which will deliver the first chargers out and give them the way open, okay?
Actually, the CPOs, they do it in many different... Some of them, they get them already pre-configured.
Ah, okay.
And others, they do it themselves as part of the installation.
Okay.
So that could be the
but
service partners doing that.
Okay,
but
for you.
Yeah, both for us. We try to have, as well for the charger manufacturers, to have a very close relationship.
Yeah.
Because for us, it's important that we get a lot of the information about how they work, if they don't work, and if you get this specific error message, what should be done? Because then we can gather that information and we can provide that for the people actually servicing and keeping the field service, keeping them alive and up to date. So that's an important thing today for our system, that we can do that and that we do that and keep it in line with what should be. So, yeah.
And we heard before you started with this 15,000 charging points already where you started with your system. Now we're talking how much charging points you operate and help to operate?
The first one that we built, there we are talking hundreds of thousands of charge points now. So that's, and you can say one issue with, it's actually not an issue, but you can say that's a basic design thing that you need to do when your first question was scalability. Yeah. And that's actually automating things.
Yeah, for sure.
because it's right. A lot of the things you can actually do that when you have 1,000 chargers or 10,000, you can do that by hand. But if you have 200,000 chargers or 500 for that matter, then you need to automate all the processes around keeping your network healthy. And the configurations is, of course, one of them. Another good example is that if you would like to roll out new patches, firmware updates, and that's also, again, to be compliant. You need to ensure that your charger has been patched. It's a liability on the grid. So you need to know that it's okay. So yes, of course, if you have fewer chargers, it's okay that a person who can do it manually upload the new firmware version and see that it's actually being tested. Is it still communicating? Yes, I go on to the next charger. But I mean, you can't do that if you have 100,000 chargers.
You need
to do it automatically.
And you're doing this, how do you, just sending out the update to all chargers at once?
No, you can say there are a specific paradigm of how to do that. You typically do that, like you can say, very small canary installation. You take maybe like 10 first, then you try it out. Then you have some metrics where you go say, do I get more connection errors? Do I see more errors coming up now than before from the chargers themselves? Then you start saying, okay, that actually looks fine. The metrics are the same. And then you start maybe with 100 chargers more. And then 500 chargers, and then 5,000.
Just
then,
going on from there.
And then you go nuts with the rest.
Okay.
So when you are confident that they are behaving as they should, that of course also gives you some possibility of saying, we can actually see that now we are generating a lot more errors.
Yeah.
So we stop after the 10, roll them back.
Okay.
And then we
have
a chat with the charge point vendor saying, We see some issues with the new firmware version, so you should check that and then give them the logs of what's the problem is. So yeah, that's needed when you go large scale to do stuff like that.
I understand this.
Yeah.
Now, after we had the look at the misconfigured chargers, and you said also it should be the best feeling for the EV drivers itself if they got there, we have a typical issue, which I know myself, if I'm charging my car, I'm getting there, want to start charging my car, I put out the nozzle, put it into the car, want to start charging, and they say, no, it's already occupied.
Yeah.
Other times I can do this and it works.
Yeah.
Is it also a problem which you're working with on Teal and get this feedback and get the software better or the solution better?
Yeah, definitely. You can say there can, of course, be many different issues regarding this, But one thing, and that's actually a fun thing. I don't know if it is actually not fun because it's a problem. But you can say that what you really would like to do with the EV charging is to make it like the same experience as you had before with your diesel or gasoline car. So that means if you put in the nozzle first, or if you go and pay with your credit card or whatever it is, so you can say like you authenticate yourself and say that you can actually pay for this. If you do one or the other, first or last, shouldn't matter. You can do the same with the gas pumps. So, but we still see that it's like it should be a given that you need to do this first. You need to go and, you can say, authenticate your credit card first. Yeah. Then you are allowed to put in the nozzle.
Yeah.
And I mean, you should be able to do both because else we are challenging the EV drivers that why should they know that if they want it or they need to do something?
It should be hassle-free for them, or?
Of course. So it should be hassle-free.
Yeah.
And that's, again, where I think that that's something where we need to take the responsibility as the backend, because we can ensure that both workflows, that they actually, that they are running.
And you have a solution for that then?
Yeah, we have. So we don't care if you do one or the other.
Yeah.
But of course, you should be able to do that. So, but I still see that that there are some issues out there that not all systems are taking that into account.
But if you're looking at the software side of parts, is it okay? We couldn't configure the chargers right where we could put this problem out of it. It seems like me, okay, you have the solution.
Yeah.
We are there.
Yeah.
Now it's a job done. Or do we see there are coming up new problems?
There will for sure be more. I've never seen something where we did and then said, okay, now we have solved all problems.
Okay.
And it's not, and it never will be, because there will always, as you've seen, there have been a lot of new versions of standards.
Yeah.
There will again be different, you can say, interpretations of how is this standard to be implemented. There will be new stuff coming up. We see new ways of, for example, doing. We talked about that you actually authenticate yourself through the process of saying, I can pay for this and I'm me. We see auto charge. We will see plug and charge coming in. So, of course, there will be issues. So, but I think that the most important thing is that we actually try to say we take responsibility and solve this. And yes, of course, there will be issues in other parts of the chain. If we have a possibility to make a solution for that, of course, we should do it.
Yeah, for sure.
To make that, as you say, as a seamless process for the user. That's the most important thing.
So this is the expertise which you're bringing inside.
Yep.
And you're doing this sometimes also proactive for the CPO, because the CPO don't know all these problems, I think. So you're the expert for this and will solve it.
Yeah, and you can say that's, of course, some of the things that we have been learning the hard way of running these very large, with a lot of different kinds of chargers and a lot of traffic going through, a lot of different cars being connected, etc. So we have learned that during the last 8 years, what to do. And so, of course, that's what we are building in. And that's the mindset that we are building, the system that we are doing now. So.
And you have also the, I say, problem is a little bit too high from the word, but you have your problems with the chargers, but you also have to look at the cars, I think, so which are charging there, because new cars getting into the game is also, could be a position, possible problem there on the chargers.
Yes, definitely. And you can say that, and that's again back to where a bit where we started talking about how do you get some knowledge about this? You need to go and have some very, you can say, profound knowledge about the chargers themselves. How do they communicate with the cars?
Yeah.
Also, when new cars coming up, when they have new firmware versions, the same for the cars. They have new software versions all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
And with good reasons. So
I know.
Many of them are put very freshly, you can say, out on the market before maybe they have been tested that thoroughly. Yeah. So there will be issues between them. And if it's possible to, you can say, do something extra because you would know the communication between you and the charger. Of course, we can't do anything about the raw communication between the car and the charger, but we might be able to do something where we try to put a bit of extra rubber around it on the back end, and then things work as well. But one thing, for example, is that I've seen also some data on that with timeouts on the back end, etc.
Yeah.
And for sure there will be that because the chargers are different. So some of them, they have some expectations, some have others.
Yeah.
So that's maybe an important point that you should be willing and you should have built something where you can easily change it.
Yeah.
So you are, when you see something like that, you should be able to go in and willingly to change your back end. Do that, redeploy that, getting ready, and now you can handle that situation as well. So, and that's actually one of the huge things where people say, we have a site, two, three chargers are not working. Why?
Yeah.
That's definitely one of the big issues, and that's possible to do something about that as well.
So, that's good.
But it's back to taking responsibility of the rest of the components.
It's coming all back to this then for the whole system.
Exactly, yeah.
So we talked about Teal, we talked about EV drivers and their problems.
Yeah.
But you want to provide the solutions for the CPOs especially. And
yes.
Solution means uptime, because uptime means making money if people are charging it.
Yeah.
But also keeping costs low on the other side because of all optimization.
Yes.
How do you do this, Teal? How do you provide these kind of solutions for your customers and your clients then?
Yeah, you can say we have already touched on some of them. But you can say, the basic thing is being able to automate things.
Okay.
You can see if you're a CPO, you're running a network, it's a huge difference if you need 40 people or 4 people to actually operate it. And if you need to, you can say, operate a network with, let's just say 50,000 chargers or whatever it is, then you need to have a key thing to automate everything.
Yeah.
So everything that you would normally do, we have already talked about the firmware rollout.
Yeah.
If you should do that for 50,000 chargers, you would maybe need each week a couple of persons to actually be able to do that.
Yeah.
So, and you can say what we have seen, what we have built already. There you can actually, you can run a network with 150, 200,000 charges with 4 to 6 people.
Wow.
So that, and that makes a huge difference.
That's
because,
for sure.
Of course, what we see is that the margins are low.
Yeah.
When you can say it's a matter about selling electricity.
Yeah.
So you need really to optimize your, all your operations.
Yeah.
So automation, that's key. And that's both for delivering data to all of these national access hubs. You need to automate things for not only the configuration, not only for the rollout, also, of course, for the full monitoring. So some of it could be as well. That's what we are doing in our system. You can say some preventive stuff, like that. It could be that a type of chargers, they should be like restarted once a week. Not to, you can say they might have firmware which are leaking memory, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's a bit technical, but you can say that could actually prevent them from being out of order if you just do a restart each third day or once a week. Again, if you should do that manually, I mean, you couldn't do anything else.
You're just hopping around.
Exactly. So everything you can say that the software might be able to do, you should do it.
Yeah.
And of course, a second thing of that is then you also don't have any errors that you might do. Going back again to the configuration thing, if you should do that manually, do you do it right when you have to sit and do it manually? In the software, we are 100% sure that we are doing it correctly.
Right.
So, yeah. And we can do a lot of tests as well.
For them then
see,
also.
For them as well. So I would say that That's probably one of the most important things that we are seeing coming up, especially for these when the networks for the large CPOs, they are getting bigger. They are buying other networks and a whole other issue that we are seeing now is that we have a bit of a special situation here in Denmark because, again, we have had some specific tech rules.
Yeah.
So that means that all the private charters as well have been managed.
Okay.
In other European countries, we don't see that in the same degree. So that's also why you can say one of the very large or the largest CPO here in Denmark, they are maybe like the largest one in Europe because of that. But you can see the same will happen in the other countries.
Yeah.
And the reason why is, of course, that we have the electric grid. We are putting on, you can say, an intelligent machine, a computer,
as
the charge point is. So if for cyber attacks, et cetera, they should be managed.
Yeah.
So that's a crucial thing as well. And that means that when all of these, also the private ones, probably within the next years, they will be managed as well. Then at CPO, which has like, let's say 7,000 public ones, they will maybe have as well 250 private ones.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
that will totally change the game.
And especially if you think about it, if they build the public ones, it's always the same architecture of the hardware then. But if they go into the space of the normally EV driver like us here and have to manage them already, then it's this kind of hardware.
Yeah.
And it's getting more complicated then for them.
So you can say only the more factors, of course. But one thing is, of course, the different kinds of hardware.
Yeah.
So now you'll get even more brands when you have that many.
Yeah.
But as well, just the sheer size of it that you need to do something. Also, for example, we haven't talked about that, but let's take smart charging.
Yeah.
A lot of efforts are going in right now for handling that correctly. And you could say, what would happen if you actually started when the prices are getting low and you started charging for 200,000 cars at the same time?
We get blackout, they're all talking about us.
So stuff like that, you suddenly need to handle because of the scale of it.
Yeah.
It didn't matter before when you had 500 cars.
Getting up there.
Just the scale, that changes the game.
And so, especially we don't always talk about Denmark in your case then there. We're talking whole Europe. If the energy is going down from the price, all of these countries want to charge then therefore.
Yes.
So they also need to talk together then.
Yeah. So we are charging our car, we are starting all our household machines, yeah. Everything is happening at the same second.
Yeah. And then we have this crisis, all fuel card drivers talking about the blackout, which I don't think will happen because like companies like Teal, which provide solutions then there, and also from your competition side, which also have some things up. We now talk
maybe one thing you can say, even in Denmark, we right now we have a situation where they have paused new connections for the grid for 3 months. Even though I guess that that we have maybe one of the best, most stable one in Europe, but even we are doing that now. So so the adoption rates, etc., they just we need to do something more intelligently.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And if you're looking forward in, we talked about the past, where you're coming from, but you already provided solutions for. Yeah. What's the next big hurdle in public charging which you need to find a solution for from the side of Teal or from side of the CPOs to get e-mobility even more out there?
There's definitely one theme around, you can say, stabilizing the grid.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people now, they talk about, instead of, you can say, being somebody who utilizes, we are a resource instead. So utilize the batteries, being able to peak shave on, you can say, the utilization of the grid, being able to go in and being part of these flexibility services. So when it gets unstable, you can actually either stop charging of the cars for some minutes, whatever is needed, or on the other hand, if you need to take out energy, you can start them. So being able to, you can say, participate in that's definitely going to be a major thing, and already is. Everybody's talking about it. Some are already doing some of it, and that has been some of what we have been participating in as well. Until what we are doing, and when we are talking about, you can say, in right now we are talking with a lot of companies in the Nordic countries. Yeah. All of them, they are looking into different kinds of solutions with batteries, solar,
being able
to do the right load management, combining that with smart charging strategies, etc. So that's the next thing that we should crunch together.
So we have exciting times in front of us.
We definitely have.
Okay, so thank you, Jørgen, for the insights of your space, of your company, how you provide solutions there. And I think we will keep us in each other, speak with each other and see what's coming and what you provide in future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And thank you for coming to Copenhagen and visit us and and
for
walk around in these wonderful surroundings here.
Thank you for inviting us here.
Yes.
Das war's dann also auch schon wieder mit der aktuellen Podcast-Folge, die ein Stück weit länger ging, was aber gar nicht verkehrt ist, denn ich denke, man konnte einiges mitnehmen aus diesem Gespräch, was man vor allem von Dänemark aus nach Deutschland bringen kann, dort adaptieren kann, um das Ladeerlebnis in Zukunft noch besser zu machen. Dir vielen Dank fürs Zuhören bei dieser englischsprachigen Folge, was ja doch immer noch eine Besonderheit für mich ist, wie du ja sicherlich rausgehört hast, aber es macht mir eben Freude, meinen Horizont auch ein Stück weit zu erweitern, jede Woche. Demnach auch wieder kommende Woche, wenn die nächste Folge des ERN-Podcast online geht. Mach's gut, bis dahin, ciao.